Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming to this session of Sunstone to hear Michael Marquardt present on Martin Harris. If you brought in any drinks from outside at the breakfast, we'd ask the coffee drinkers to stay on the left side, orange juice and water and milk on the right side. Michael Marquardt is—it's hard to know how to introduce him because it would take a long time to list everything that he's done. But Mike has been heavily involved in Mormon history since the 1970s, and Mike is a true pioneer in this field. And he has vast archival materials here at the University of Utah that are very popular among researchers. He's produced numerous articles and books. A book I find myself referring to quite often is his book that is kind of a commentary on the revelations of the Doctrine and Covenants and other revelations that are not included in that. And it's called Joseph Smith's 1828 to 1843 Revelations. It's a great reference. Another book that he recently co-authored is called Lost Apostles, and it's a story of some of those apostles that didn't quite stay on the straight and narrow, maybe the ones that would be sitting over here on the left. And there's some absolutely fascinating stories. So if you're looking for some good, interesting reading, go over to the bookstore, pick up a copy of Lost Apostles, and you'll enjoy that. One other note about Mike. Mike is he's a very generous soul, very helpful to any young Mormon historian who needs assistance. Mike has always reached out and has been so helpful to them. So we're very lucky to have Mike presenting a fascinating story about Martin Harris today.
Thank you for attending the session. This paper will explore what is known about Martin Harris and his relationship to Restoration Churches under the leadership of Joseph Smith Jr., James J. Strang, William E. McClellan, David Whitmer, Gladden Bishop, and William Smith. It's a brief summary of his activities in New York, Ohio, and Utah Territory. As a background, Martin was born in 1783 and became a farmer who owned valuable property in Palmyra Township, New York. Harris, at the age of 26, married his cousin Lucy, and they raised a family of four known children. Harris stated in 1818 that he was inspired of the Lord and taught of the Spirit that he should not join any church. He was trusted in ordinary day-to-day business dealings, but was considered by his contemporaries in religious matters as a visionary man and easily influenced. One of the reasons that you do not hear more about Martin in his Kirkland years is because he was an unstable man in religious matters. Martin Harris became the last of the three witnesses to see in vision the Book of Mormon gold plates and adds his name to the religious testimony of its authenticity. He is known for financing the Book of Mormon. His marriage with his wife Lucy broke up because of the time and money he spent in promoting Joseph Smith Jr. and the Book of Mormon. He was 46 years old when he was baptized into the Restored Church on April 6, 1830, the day of organization in Manchester, Ontario County, New York. The first contemporary reference to Martin Harris being in Ohio is when he arrived at Painesville in March 1831. The local newspaper reported he immediately planted himself in the bar room of the hotel. He told all about the gold plates, angels, spirits, and Joe Smith. He had seen and handled them all by the power of God. He was very flippant, talking fast and loud, in order that others could not impose an opinion contrary to him. Every idea that he advanced, he knew to be absolutely true, as he said, by the Spirit and power of God, declaring that all who believed the new Bible would see Christ in 15 years, and all those who would not would be utterly destroyed and damned. Martin visited Kirkland for a number of days and then returned to Palmyra. On his second trip, he led a group of saints to Kirkland. Thank you. Harris was a member of the United Firm by June 25th, 1833, and on this date he signed a letter with the church presidency addressed to Edward Partridge regarding the city center of Zion and the temples that were to be built there. In February 1834, Joseph Smith organized the church's Kirkland High Council. Harris was chosen a member. Martin attended some meetings, but he often was out of town as he made frequent trips back to Palmyra. In 1835, he assisted in the selection of the first 12 apostles. He was also helped ordain 9 of them. But Harris left Kirkland as he was not at the meeting of February 21st when they ordained Party P. Pratt. And Pratt was ordained by Joseph Smith Jr., Oliver Cowdery, and David Whitmer. Martin returned to Kirkland and received a patriarchal blessing from Joseph Smith Sr., the church patriarch, in August 1835. The blessing said, "Thou hast left thy family and house for the gospel's sake, and given all for the purpose of spreading the work of thy God. For this thou shalt be blessed and rewarded an hundredfold. Yea, thou hast left thy family and consecrated them unto the Lord. Thou shalt teach them, even thy wife, that she may be saved in the day of eternity. But if not, they shall be removed from the earth, and her place be supplied with another. And thy heart shall be satisfied, for thou shalt raise up seed unto the Lord to praise him in his kingdom." Harris returned to Palmyra and sold property in October 1835, signing with Lucy Harris. Though separated in their marriage, they still managed to sell property for revenue. It was recorded in Joseph Smith's journal that Elder Harris also returned this morning from Palmyra, New York. Harris had no known involvement in the purchase of the Egyptian mummies and papyri, the Hebrew school, or the Kirkland Safety Society. Family tradition has it that Martin's wife, Lucy, died in Palmyra in the summer of 1836 at the age of 44. In November 1836, Martin married Caroline Young, and she was the daughter of John Young, brother to Brigham Young. Caroline was 20 years old when she married Harris, and Harris was 33 years older than Caroline. Harris was 53 years old. The next year, Harris was at Palmyra and sold property with his wife, Caroline. Later in 1837, Martin, along with other members, had a falling out with church officials. Near the end of December, he was cut off from the church by the High Council. While Harris had no stock in the Kirkland Bank, he may have been influenced by its failure. John Clark, a Palmyra acquaintance of Martin, wrote concerning the Kirkland Bank and Enterprise, "Ultimately, this speculation contributed to sever Harris from Joseph Smith and Sidney Rigdon." Harris, in one of his late visits to Palmyra, remarked to a friend of mine that Joe Smith had now become a complete wretch and he had no confidence in him or Rigdon. Caroline's and Martin's first child was born in January 1838. Their family eventually had 7 children. In the same month, Martin was associated with the major leader of the dissenters, Warren Parrish. Harris helped incorporate the Church of Christ and was one of its three trustees, along with Joseph Cole and Cyrus Smalling. Though many individuals had problems with Joseph Smith, they still worshipped in the Kirkland Temple. It was at one of these meetings that Harris mentioned that he never saw the plates with his natural eyes, only in vision. The late Kimball wrote to her husband Heber in January 1838 that a large party descended from the church. The leaders of this band is Martin Harris, Warren Parrish, Joseph Cole, Luke Johnson, and John Boynton. There was a division in this newly organized church with those who believed the Book of Mormon and those who did not. By July 1840, Martin was received back into the church. In 1841, he was listed as a member of the high priest quorum. The next year, during a religious reformation in November 1842, he was rebaptized, as were other Kirkland dissenters. Four separate sources state that soon after this, Harris became a follower of Mother Ann Lee, founder in the 18th century of the Shaker movement, United Society of Believers in Christ's Second Coming. Harris appears associated with a divine roll or book published in New Hampshire in 1843. This book was titled A Holy, Sacred, and Divine Roll and Book from the Lord God of Heaven to the Inhabitants of the Earth, revealed in the United Society at New Lebanon, County of Columbia, State of New York, United States of America. 500 copies of the book were printed and bound in September 1843. At that time, most Shakers believe in receiving messages from the spirit world besides obtaining instructions from Mother Ann Lee. Communications in this sacred book included a holy roll written by John the Revelator, and revelations from biblical personages such as Elisha, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Malachi, Micah, Noah, and Peter. The publications also contain many testimonies about visitations of angels showing them the roll and book. Myra Bean stated, "Thus having received much precious knowledge at different times, I have not the least reason to doubt the divine origin of this sacred roll and book, but affirm it to be the true and unalterable word from our Heavenly Father sent upon the earth by no other means than that of divine inspiration." Other experiences, such as those at North Union, Ohio, included communications from the spirit world, and they were taken from mouths of inspired instruments, copied verbatim, who went in vision and read as they were inspired to read from a roll, manuscript, or letter, which to us were invisible until revealed. One revealment came from a letter from Father Abraham, written by his own hand in union with Holy Mother Wisdom, Mother Ann Lee. Spiritual manifestations included those in the Shaker book moved Harris in a special way. Clark Braden, in a debate held in 1884, mentioned that Harris declared repeatedly that he had as much evidence for a Shaker book as he had for the Book of Mormon. By the end of 1844, Martin Harris believed in and had a strong testimony of the sacred roll. In 1846, Martin Harris accepted James J. Strang as prophet and successor to Joseph Smith. At a conference held in Kirkland at the temple, Harris became a member of Strang's high council, as was his brother Preserved and William Codrey, father of Oliver Codrey. Leonard Rich was chosen stake president. Lester Brooks was ordained an apostle. Harris was appointed to go on a mission to England. Harris was planned to be away for about 1 year. Within a month of the Strangite Conference, Harris had signed his power of attorney to his brother Preserved and Bishop Jacob Bump. James Strang claimed a large following who acknowledged him and the true order of the church. Harris shortly left after executing his power of attorney and arrived in England in October 1846 with Apostle Lester Brooks. The Millennial Star, the church publication in the hands of the 12 apostles in England, republished a circular that contained a letter of August 1846 from Crandall Dunn to William Appleby relating to James J. Strang. Dunn presided over the western part of Michigan when Strang presented his claim as a prophet in August 1844. This publication of the issue of October 15, 1846 would have some effect upon Harris's mission. The group arrived in Liverpool, but there was opposition from the Latter-day Saint messenger and advocate. Elder Marson made Strangism look so contemporarily mean that Martin publicly denied being sent by Strang or being in any way connected with him. At a quarterly conference held in Birmingham on October 25th, Harris wanted to speak, but the conference voted and denied his request. So he went into the street and commenced holding forth in the annoyance of the people. The Millennial Star printed the results of Harris's attempt to preach to the conference. We also learned from Elder Wheelock's letter that Martin Harris and his escort had paid them a visit. He, Harris, on being introduced to the conference, wished to speak. On being rejected by the united voice of the conference, he went out into the street and began to proclaim the corruption of the 12. But here the officers of government honored him with their presence. Two policemen came and gently took hold of each arm and led Martin away to the lockup. An editorial proclaimed that Harris was of the devil and a wicked man. Martin Harris, one of the witnesses to the Book of Mormon, yielded to the temptation and spirit of the devil a number of years ago, turned against Joseph Smith, and became his bitter enemy. The editorial further stated, in one of his fits of monomania, he went and joined the Shakers, or followers of Ann Lee. He tarried with them a year or two, or perhaps longer, having some flare-ups with them. But since Strang has made his entry into the apostate ranks and hoisted his standard for the rebellious to flock to, Martin leaves the Shakers, whom he knows to be right and has known for many years, as he said, and joins Strang in gathering out the tares of the field. We understand that he has appointed a mission to this country, but we do not feel to warn the saints against him, for his own unbridled tongue will soon show out specimens of folly enough to give any person a true index to the character of the man. Harris and Brooks did not have any success in their missionary work during the time they were there. In fact, it was one of the shortest missions to England, about 2.5 months, and Harris and Brooks arrived back in New York on December 8th. Returning to Kirkman by January 1847, Martin joined with former apostle William E. McLellan, Church of Christ, which was advocating David Whitmer as prophet, seer, revelator, and successor to Joseph Smith. William E. McLellan received a revelation given the following instructions: "Let my servant William baptize and confirm and reordain my servant Martin, and thus shall he confirm his authority upon him by the laying on of hands, saying, Brother Martin, I lay my hands upon you in the name of Jesus Christ, and I reordain you and confirm upon you the office of high priest in the Church of Christ after the holy order of the Son of God. And I pray God in the name of Jesus, his Son, to give unto you in your calling all the gifts and blessings and powers thereof, and keep you faithful unto the end. Amen." Then let my servant Martin administer to my servant William in the same manner and according to the same pattern. And let my servant Leonard Rich likewise receive the same ministration. Yea, let my servants William and Martin and Leonard do as the Spirit of Truth now directs. On February 13, 1847, Harris joins William E. McClellan's Church of Christ by baptism, confirmation, and reordination to the same authority which he held in the days before Latter-day Saintism was known. This church numbered about 42 members. A committee wrote, "Martin Harris has retired to his little farm in Kirkland, Ohio, and stands warning all that the church will not prosper until they throw away their fictitious name and take again, as in the beginning, the name of the Church of Christ and return to their first love that refers to, return to their first love and keep the commandments of God." Lester Brooks wrote to James Strang, "Martin Harris, I learn, is at Kirkland doing all he can against you. The greatest blunder that I ever committed was in taking Harris to England." Harris was so impressed with McClellan's organization that he gave his testimony as one of the three witnesses that Joseph Smith in July 1834 ordained David Whitmer as his successor. And the third issue of the Ensign of Liberty contained a testimony of the three witnesses concerning Whitmer's 1834 ordination as successor to Joseph Smith. At a church conference held in June 1849, Martin Harris was appointed president of the meeting. It was resolved that fellowship be withdrawn from William E. McClellan, both as an elder or member of the church. In November 1849, Harris was in Rochester, New York. A local newspaper reported that he no longer goes with the Mormons and bore his testimony against them, saying that rather than being Latter-day Saints, they were Latter-day Devils. Harris professed to have a mission from God. Another newspaper reported Harris, even now, has a confused, incoherent belief in that religion. Yet he declared to me, while visiting here from the West only a few months ago, that he had known Joe Smith to be an exceeding immoral and dishonest man for a number of years before he was killed, and had no confidence in him. In 1851, Harris became a follower of Francis Gladden Bishop. Bishop claimed to have the sacred things, that is, the golden plates of the Book of Mormon, the Book of Ether, the Book of Life, or sealed records, the interpreters, the breastplate of Moroni, and the sword of Laban. A detailed description of each was given by Bishop in the Kirkland Temple in March 1851. Bishop's description was published in a broadside titled, "A Proclamation from the Lord to His People, Scattered Throughout All the Earth." The plates were pure gold, about 8 inches in length and about 6 inches in width, and in compact form, about 4 inches in thickness, each plate being about the 12th of an inch thick. They are in all 48 plates, divided as follows. The first part, or division, consists of 24 plates. From these was the Book of Mormon translated. And on the first plate in this division is inscribed in large Reform Egyptian characters the title of this division, which in the English language is rendered the Book of Mormon. There are also a variety of other characters upon the same page, among which are the characters which stand as the alphabet of the Reform Egyptian language in which the whole division is written. The characters are rubbed over with a black substance so as to fill up in order that the dazzling of the gold between the characters would not prevent their being easily seen. This proclamation was the flying roll sent forth as the testimony and power of my three witnesses whom I have called. The three witnesses were Gladden Bishop, his wife Phoebe, and Martin Harris. Bishop stated, "My witnesses have borne their testimony before my people in this place, yea, and in my house, even that which my people have built and dedicated to me in Kirkland." Stephen Hart said that Harris worked off and on for him for 15 or 20 years. His judgment about farming was good. When we finished hoeing the corn, he would raise his hands toward the field and pronounce a blessing and say he was sure a good crop with his blessing. Martin, when questioned closely about the place from which the Book of Mormon purports to have been taken, would say he saw the plates by the eye of faith. In 1855, Thomas Colburn and W.W. Russ visited Martin Harris, who said he had lost all confidence in Joseph Smith. William Smith had an interest in joining with Martin Harris, and visitors claimed that they had organized another church. But Harris was now involved in communications with the spirit world, that is, spiritualism. This is not surprising since his earlier testimony of the Shaker book or roll. Harris visited Miss Sexton, a spirit medium of Cleveland, and received through her a proclamation. This he published in May 1855 as a proclamation and warning unto all people, first to all kings, governors, and rulers in authority, and unto every kindred, tongue, and people under the whole heavens. The 8-page pamphlet proclaimed the word of the Lord from Moses, Elias, Elijah, and John. Martin was called the messenger of the covenant, for he speaketh the words of Elijah and is sent forth to do the work of Elijah. Christopher Carey recalled the following about Harris. "One day when working for me, he handed me a leaflet that he got printed, taken from some of the prophets, telling of a wonderful person that should appear and draw all men after him. I looked it over and returned it to him. He, Martin, said, 'Who do you think it refers to?' I said, 'Why, of course it refers to you.' He looked very pleased and said, 'I see you understand the scriptures.'" Stephen Post was personally involved in a conference held in Kirkland Temple with Martin Harris as the conference president and Post as secretary. 12 resolutions were accepted and plans for another conference the next year. Martin wrote a letter to Brigham Young in Utah Territory and sent him a copy of the proclamation commanding him in the name of God to publish the revelation in the Deseret News or another publication. Brigham Young did not have the proclamation printed. Through the years, Martin Harris and others in Kirkland continued in the Church of Christ. In his role as a minister, Martin performed a baptism in April 1857. The Painesville Telegraph, a newspaper printed about 11 miles from Kirkland, reported, "Elder Martin Harris of the Latter-day Saints on Friday last baptized a happy convert in river near the Geauga Mills." Stephen Post wrote that in September 1857, William Smith got up a revelation, appointed me as a printer to the church, and so forth. He is now trying to organize as president in Kirkland, Ohio. Enoch Beebe even mentioned that Martin Harris had organized the church in this place with 6 members, appointed William Smith their leader, prophet, seer, and revelator. In a few days, Martin drove William Smith out of the place and damned him to hell. But the little Church of Christ continued, and by June 1858 was taken the Bible and Book of Mormon for their guide. The leaders included Martin Harris, Leonard Rich, and Zadok Brooks. They claim that polygamy and all its kindred institutions are a base apostasy from the teachings of the Book of Mormon. A newspaper correspondent reported, while I was in Kirkland, they removed the name Latter-day Saints from a temple and said that it should be put the name Christ in its stead. They wanted to raise money to repair the temple. The Painesville newspaper printed, some changes are being made in the temple. And one is the old and original inscription high on its front, to wit, House of the Lord, built by the Latter-day Saints, 1834, has been removed, and a simple one, Church of Christ, put on. In 1858, an edition of the Book of Mormon was printed in New York by J.O. Wright and Company. Apparently, Russell Huntley purchased the plates and printed 4,000 copies with a new introduction written by Zadok Brooks, an elder in the Church of Christ. The reorganization used this printing until 1874, when they printed their own edition. The Church of Jesus Christ, headquartered in Mahoning, Pennsylvania, reprinted the introduction, and it is currently retained in their printing of the Book of Mormon without Brooks' name. In early 1859, editor Joel Tiffany of Tiffany's Monthly, a spiritualist publication of New York City, visited Martin Harris and interviewed him for 4 days. Martin's account is an important recollection of his association with the Joseph Smith Sr. family prior to 1828. Harris told Tiffany that he asked those in the family how the plates were found and was told that they were located by looking in the stone found in the well of Mason Chase. William W. Blair, an apostle of the reorganization, proceeded to Kirkland, arriving there on August 9th. He recalled, here I met the brethren, James Twiss and family, Martin Harris, Leonard Rich, and others, all professing a deep interest in the Latter-day work. The town had a sorry look, and the condition of the temple was pitiful. It walls inside and out. Also, its trimmings and decorations were badly defaced. It appears that Zadok Brooks, Russell Huntley, and others had effected a small organization and proposed to refit and refurbish the temple. Blair recorded in his journal, I learned that Russell Huntley designs fixing it up. If well done, it will cost about $2,000. Elder Zadok Brooks, Leonard Rich, and Martin Harris have formed an organization of 7 souls. 4 of them are women. The Brooks group that Harris was a member of was called the Church of Christ, and they worshiped in the Kirkland Temple. In February 1862, James McKnight was at Kirkland, and Martin Harris came to see him. McKnight wrote of his brief visit with Harris. Of his property, there is little or none. He has now no home. His son, George, a worthless scapegrace, with whom he lived, being in prison, and the house deserted, yet you have no doubtless often heard he has never failed to confirm his testimony to the truth of that book. He says he's going to Utah as soon as the Lord will release him. On April 18, 1862, Russell Huntley purchased by quit claim deed the land on which the Kirkland Temple stands. 8 years later, Edward Stevenson, on a mission for the LDS Church, visited Kirkland and saw the temple. Stevenson wrote concerning this visit, while there, I again met Martin Harris, soon coming out of the temple. He took from under his hand a copy of the Book of Mormon, the first edition, I believe, and bore his faithful testimony. After Stevenson returned to Utah, he wrote to Harris and soon received a reply that the Spirit of God for the first time prompted him to go to Utah. Brigham Young requested Stevenson to get up a subscription and immigrate Martin. $200 was raised, and Stevenson eventually returned to Kirkland. Edward Stevenson mentioned that Martin had a great desire to see Utah and his children that lived there, and that Harris was coming to the conclusion, after trying everything else, that the work of the Lord is progressing in the top of the mountains, and that the people are gathering in the fulfillment of prophecy. Harris and Stevenson left on August 19, 1870. They arrived 10 days later in Ogden, Utah. In early September, Martin spoke in the old tabernacle and told about the early incidents of the early church and bore his testimony to the Book of Mormon. His earlier experiences were of a different Mormonism than his renewed faith. On September 17th, Martin was rebaptized in the font of the Salt Lake Endowment House, and he later spoke at the General Conference in October. On October 21st, he received his own endowment in the Endowment House. Martin Harris spent the remaining 4.5 years of his life in Cache Valley, bearing his Book of Mormon testimony. He died in Clarkston in July 1875 at his age of 92. Martin Harris followed and was associated with a number of churches throughout his life. He always maintained a belief in the organization he joined. It appears that Harris was unstable in his religious beliefs. He was influenced by Warren Parrish, William E. McClellan, and others. Harris accepted a number of prophet leaders after the death of Joseph Smith. And like many other spiritual gypsies, he wanted a place where he was important. Martin followed or believed in Joseph Smith Jr., James Strang, David Whitmer, Gladden Bishop, and William Smith as prophets, seers, and revelators. This is a brief overview of our understanding of Martin Harris in the Mormon movement. In all of these associations, Martin Harris never denied any of his experiences. Thank you.
The objective of Mike's paper was to explore what is known about Martin Harris and his relationship to Restoration churches under the leader of Joseph Smith Jr. and several claimed successors to Joseph Smith. Mike has provided an excellent overview of Harris's involvement in several religious enterprises, most part of the Latter-day Saint movement, but was also drawn to the Shakers and to spiritualism. We learned of Harris's original nature as a seeker searching for religious truth as early as 1818, when he said he was, quote, inspired of the Lord and taught of the Spirit that he should not join any church, close quote, and that he was a visionary man whom some considered easily influenced. We get a glimpse of the early millennial fervor and worldview of Harris and his, and presumably his followers in Mormonism, with his 1831 declaration that, quote, all who believed in the new Bible would see Christ within 15 years, and all who did not would absolutely be destroyed and be damned, end quote. Harris's statement on early Mormonism are important and give a sense of how the saints perceived themselves in the earliest days of the church. While Harris was allowed to help choose the 12 apostles in the mid-1830s, his prominence in the church slipped, and he apostatized with many others in the latter 1830s. While he was readmitted back into the church in 1840, by 1844 he had become enamored with and had a strong testimony of a divine role, a book published by Shakers containing communications from John the Revelator, Elisha, and Malachi. The concept of prophets from the past communicating with present-day seekers as part of a restoration of truth was a thread common to both Latter-day Saints and the Shakers. As noted by Mike, Harris began following Gladden Bishop in 1851, who soon produced a proclamation from a flying roll sent forth by the Lord as a testimony and power of my three witnesses whom I have now called. I have to wonder if Bishop's flying role was influenced by the Shaker's divine role. It also appears that the content of the flying role was influenced by Harris's belief in Bishop and Bishop's belief in Harris, indicated by the text of the role speaking of testimony of three witnesses. In 1846, Martin Harris began following the charismatic James Strang, who claimed to be Joseph Smith's designated successor, but soon shifted to fellow Book of Mormon witness David Whitmer, and then a brief stint with William Smith. Harris's bouncing between various claimed successors of Joseph Smith gives a sense of the difficulty many followers of Joseph Smith had when determining who to follow. He also flirted with spiritualism, but was inspired him to command Brigham Young, in the name of the Lord, to publish a revelation received through a Miss Sexton, containing the words of Moses, Elijah, John, and others. While Miss Sexton's spiritualism was outside of Mormonism, her proclamation shared a common thread with Mormonism, that of communication to present-day seekers from past prophets. Harris would eventually end up in Utah among Brigham Young's followers, recounting stories of prominent positions in the earliest days of the church. My reading of Mike's paper, a well-done paper, suggests to me that Harris's early experiences with Joseph Smith, the translations, his extreme millenarian worldview, and other early experiences with Joseph Smith became cemented in Harris's psyche as the pinnacle of his religious experience. It seems to me that hearing of his subsequent spiritual adventures, Harris may have been searching for that original experience, hoping to recreate that worldview. But each of his ventures were fleeting. They were unable to capture the depth of his original experience with early Mormonism. Mike, you could comment on materials you have in your chronology. I think we ran out of your chronology, and I don't know if that's available elsewhere, and you have some other materials. Maybe Mike could talk about that and then take questions and answers.
Sorry, I ran out of the handout. Sorry, I ran out of the handout. You got one. Okay. Very good. Thank you. I think someone had a question relating to Martin Harris being one of the three witnesses for the ordination of David Whitmer. And basically, in July 1834, at the end of Zion's camp, or the camp of Israel, Joseph Smith ordained David Whitmer as his successor. But later, in December 1834, he also ordained Oliver Cowdery as the assistant president of the church. So I'm sure that short appointment, as time goes on, things change. But William McLellan still believed in David Whitmer for many years, and of course, eventually he stop believing that he was his successor. And David Whitmer himself, believed that he was successor until shortly before his death. So there's an evolution in the belief system of William E. McLellan and also of David Whitmer. But that the appointment in July 1834 occurred is certain. Do we have any questions? All right, go ahead.
Two questions. Number one, what was Martin Harris's reaction to Joseph Smith's murder? And then question number two, Brigham Young, of course, excoriated Thomas Marsh when he returned to Utah. Did Brigham Young also have similar reactions to Martin Harris when he came to Utah?
Yeah, well, first, we don't know too much about...
Summarize the question.
The first question is relating to what was Harris's opinion of the death of Joseph Smith. We really don't know. I don't know of anything that is printed about that. So on Brigham Young, they were happy to have Martin Harris return to the church. Of course, he got rebaptized. He spoke in the, like I said, in the old tabernacle, bore his testimony. But if you read some of the other material of some of the apostles, they knew that his knowledge was of the early time frame. You know, Martin never was in Nauvoo, so he was basically a Kirkland saint and probably more or less a Book of Mormon saint, Book of Mormon and the Bible. So that his ideas and questions, because remember, when he gets to Utah, what are they doing? They're doing baptism for the dead in the endowment house. And he questioned that, but basically he was told that, well, that's what we do, and he accepted that for a short time. So what do you think about the endowment? But that's another question that I'm sure that people have talked to Martin about. But he came in and he bore his testimony, and that was the important part, even though he probably had no idea in the world of anything else besides Mormonism of the Utah period. He knew of the gathering, but that was it. Do we have any other questions? Yes, please.
Can more be said about Lucy Harris, her skepticism, her attitude towards Joseph, her attitude towards Martin? And can there be more information confirming whether or not she took the 116 pages?
Yeah, so the question is relating to Lucy Harris. Yes, we really don't know too much. She did make a statement in 1833 telling her about her husband, and maybe he was paying attention to one of the neighbors. But she was going to let that, let God be the judge of that. She didn't believe in Mormonism. There was, like I said, there was a separation there. She doesn't say anything about whether she... took the 116 pages or not. It's possible that someone else may have done that. We just don't have a lot of information on that. But I'm sure other scholars are looking into that. Yes? Can you speak up, please? So basically the question was asked relating to Martin Harris. He has his testimony of the Book of Mormon, and later he has the testimony of all these different groups and prophets. Yeah, the early Martin Harris was certainly a lot different, and the early history was different, because when you read one of the earliest revelations, it's now LDS section 17, given in June 1829, prior to the three witnesses even seeing the plates, it said that things would be shown by faith. By faith you would see it. And that's, Harris was constant throughout his whole life. In fact, in 1838, when they had the little Church of Christ, and remember, he was one of the actual trustees, a legally incorporated Church of Christ in Kirkland. They have the, in Geauga County, they have all the information there to show it was legally organized in January 1838. Well, soon after, there was a division, those who believed the Book of Mormon and those who did not. And Harris got up, and that's, he says that he's seen the place by the Spirit, in vision or imagination. And some of the people, including Cyrus Smalling, they believe Martin. Some of them did not believe him. So the early experiences are so different in the early years, and a lot of the changes were made actually in Kirkland, Ohio. Do we have any other questions? Yes, sir. Yeah, the question was relating to Stephen Post and whether he was, had a relationship with Sidney Rigdon. Yes, this is the same Stephen Post.
Okay, so what years are we talking that Stephen Post was a bridge, and Mark Harris was a president of the world?
Yeah, so the question is relating to, what period of time that Stephen Post was, in Kirkland relating to Martin Harris. Well, that would be definitely include the years 1855, 1857. He kept a nice detailed journal. It's available from the Church History Library catalog, a nice PDF one. I believe it's in full color, so you can just go online and get it and read it. So, did you have one more question? Okay, well, we'll see if we can do that. So the question was relating to Joseph Smith and Martin Harris, maybe the association. Yeah, Martin Harris was basically a very rich man. His farm was just north of the village of Palmyra. And in the interview that he had with Joel Tiffany in 1859 revealed a lot of that stuff. And Martin said to his wife, Lucy, that he's going to town. And he says in his interview that he goes straight to the Smiths. Well, the Smith family was, very poor. And he went there and heard about the Book of Mormon. Now, prior to that, he was there at the Smiths. It's like like a millionaire being with a family that was in need. And he dropped a pin. And they supposedly couldn't find it. Well, Joseph, brought out a stone and put it in a hat and found the pin. And so Martin Harris believed that he had special power. And Martin also mortgaged his farm for the Book of Mormon. And of course, on a different note, there was what I call a revelation to sell the copyright to Canada that wanted to go around Martin Harris. And that revelation is in the manuscript book, a Book of Commandments and Revelation that the church has published. And if you get any of the Joseph Smith Papers volumes, you need to get that book. That's the one. If you have that, you have a real good insight into the revelations. But the mission failed going to Kingston. But yet there was still, you can find still documents signed by Joseph Sr. that Martin will give, get part of the proceeds to, pay back for the Book of Mormon. But on the other hand, when the Book of Mormon was being originally sold, it was sold for $1.75. Well, a lot of people didn't even purchase that. That was a lot of money. And so they dropped the price to $1.25. Now remember, the book only costs about 60 cents to print and bind when you're doing 5,000 copies. So if you're looking at the stock market, all of a sudden, Harris thought he was going to make a lot of money, and he would have if for $1.75, but he just lost 50 cents a copy. But there was times even in Kirkland when evidently Harris claimed that Joseph Smith drank liquor relating to the translation of the Book of Mormon and called before the High Council. But these men were different. They were big men. The Smiths were 6'1", and Joseph Smith, if he didn't like someone like Calvin Stoddard, just boom, knock him to the ground. There's a court case on that too. Anyway, I'll leave that for later. Do you have a question? Okay, so what's your first question? A larger study I did, it was published in Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon History, a lengthy article that, of course, footnoted and everything of the major sources. In fact, you'll find on my website, Mormon PDF website, just put that in on there, Google. And it has all the all of my articles, and the other one, the Gladden Bishop. Yeah, Bishop gives, and I read most of it, gives the most detailed description of the plates and other artifacts in all of Mormonism, and that was in 1851 in the Kirkland Temple. Now he claimed to have them. Now whether he had them, probably more spiritually than physically. But Harry, he probably got some information from Martin because he was one of his witnesses. I mean, you can see a big following. He had Gladden, his wife Phoebe, and then Martin. I mean, if you have Martin there, that's all it is. I mean, even Brigham Young, in one of his sermons in Utah Territory, said that Martin was behind that fly and roll. So, do we have another question? Yes, sir.
I picked up on the William McClellan revelation, which is ironic since Joseph Smith had received the revelation about William McClellan. Did William McClellan have other revelations besides the one you quote about Martin Harris?
The question was whether William McClellan had other revelations, basically, besides the one I quoted. I don't think he published any of the other ones, but he did make a trip down into Missouri to meet the Whitmers. And there, David Whitmer had four revealments or revelations, and they're printed in the Ensign of Liberty. And like I mentioned at the end, that Harris is all like a spiritual gypsy going from one group to another group. I mean, because when he was in Kirkland, 1837, and they voted not to keep him in the High Council, I mean, he just got up and just left the room. He was looking for a place that he would be important. For example, the Whitmers, David Whitmer, John Whitmer, that whole clan who was out of the church. They believed that James Strang was the successor. It was a short period of time. They never met, but Strang claimed to have plates. Also seen an angel. And so between all this, the idea was, we should go back to the earlier time frame. That's all they knew. They didn't know about this. Other advanced doctrines. In other words, if you read the 1835 Doctrine and Covenants, especially the lectures on theology or the lectures on faith, that you should have faith in God, well, by the time you get to Nauvoo, that changed. Now you have to have faith in ordinances. Well, thank you for your attendance and your questions.